This is a production of Cornell University.
Thank you. Next in the sequence is Diana.
Okay, great. So I have two questions that are kind of different. So one, just to clarify, have you guys not yet figured out the room situation for this year, or has that been resolved? Have they been really receptive working with you guys, or has it been kind of difficult? Because when we saw them in the fall, the committee was under the impression that you guys had sat, worked things out with regards to the storage room that you guys have and your other meeting room. So what's the status of that right now?
To clarify, class council's for
So some of the organizations that we perhaps have more questions for after reviewing the information that they provide us with in the fall semester, we'll be re-seeing in the spring semester. So two of those include the Cornell Cinema and the Willard Street Hall Student Union Board. So, and I think I can schedule them on the same day. Right now, I think they're on separate days, but I can move them and put them on the same day. So I think what could come of this is perhaps class councils and any other organizations who might have a similar problem could come to like a little roundtable discussion with the Appropriations Committee, by Cinema and Willard Street Hall Union Board. Only because we actually, so Mitch and I met with them earlier this week to discuss like DSA and room reservations and things like that. So
oh yeah, we have a room for the rest of the year.
So perhaps a more structured discussion with us present, with the committee members present, will kind of make them feel the heat, I guess, in terms of like being more transparent with the process and letting you guys know like what's happening. So that meeting will definitely be coming up. In terms of like, I don't know how soon you guys will need this, but all of those meetings are scheduled in March, only because we have like a few sessions in February. Would that be all right, or do you want it to be sooner than that?
It's sort of
opposite,
because we said we're also taking some meetings with our shows, and if you go down to March,
so how about we connect offline, and then I'll set up a time for the Appropriations Committee, you guys, and the other two organizations involved, perhaps like a member or two, like their president, their treasurer, to show up, and then we can have like a conversation about like what they hope to accomplish, what you hope to accomplish, and like how we can all work together and figure it out.
Yeah, that would be good. I guess to add to that agenda would be asking them to sort of walk with our office of the board, because they have an office at the top of the stairs of the board, but no one's over there, so we're going to go. So sort of why we're talking about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You should definitely bring it up for a meeting.
All right, so we're going to continue the speaker's list. It's going to be 45 seconds per person. Next is Wei. Were you in the speaker's list or no? Okay. Next is Dale.
I actually want to request something, Diana, but I wanted to run this by you first. It would actually be helpful. I think most people at the table, other than maybe Diana, Mitch, and members of AFCOM, don't actually get to see the documents from the organization except their byline years. And I think the representatives here might be able to be of more help if they're more aware. I wanted to ask Diana if she could prepare a report for next week, even if she just sends us the documents digitally of specifically these three organizations, class councils, the Willard Street Hall Student Union Board, and Cornell Cinema, so that people at this table could better understand the situation. Do you think that would be helpful if the SA members were more familiar?
I don't know.
Then I'd like to motion to request AFCOM and Diana to develop some report for next week so the SA members are more aware of the three organizations.
Yeah, I'll send out all those packets if you really want them. They're long.
Okay, is there any dissent to proceeding to that? Is there ask for unanimous consent, or do you want to have a vote on that? Unanimous consent? Sitting a dissent? Okay, that's settled. Next on the speaker's list is Gabe in the second speaker's list. Does anyone else want to speak first? Gabe.
So kind of a follow-up, I actually have pulled up the charter just to give you guys an idea. Just to give you guys an idea of how vague this is. It says so in part 5, like the charter, section 2 is building policy. Section basically they talk about it says so shall the council is building. That's the policy on the following areas, which shall be under the Willard Street Hall building policy. One is the Willard Street Hall. But then right under that, it says that the student union board shall use its power in a way to best accommodate in the following order, you know, the needs of the student body, the surrounding community. And then, like, even if you're how vague this is, it says, so it reserves the right to adjust the Willard Street Hall building policy in order to optimize space use and foster the charter spirit of the Willard Street Hall.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any dissent?
Dissent?
So, Dave, can you please restate your motion, and Julia, you can take your 30 seconds.
So, I'm motion to
So, I'd first like to ask Diana if that's permissible under the rules.
You should ask Dale.
Dale?
We can put people, ex officio members on the board of any bylaw.
Okay, so it is permissible. Julia, you have your defense. Is there other dissent?
Two seconds.
How do you have someone on the
ground? So that's more of a question once we get into it. So it seems like it's a debatable. So we'll go into the speaker's list. So Tracy, would you like to ask that question to Gabe? Gabe. Yeah. Is that a request for unanimous consent to do that?
Motion to suspend the agenda and move the meeting bylaws for presentation before this discussion.
Is there unanimous consent? Okay, that's done. Thank you, Dan. If you want to.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jason.
privilege, harassment, verbal attacks, acts of intimidation, different types of, crimes, some of them are crimes, but different types of, behaviors that might fall under some of the category under it is typically based upon a protected status, so there's a very long list of protected status categories that we have in our definition. The key piece provided, I like the hard one, because are the last three words in our definition, and they're orally effective, right? So there are things that are not necessarily a protected status, so think weight, body size, political affiliation, your affiliation with an organization, all types of other things, socioeconomic status, they're not protected. But people can and have been targeted because of those particular characteristics. And so that's the reason why we kind of use this expanded definition of bias to really try to capture a lot of activity that is happening. So when we're looking at what we want to report from the system now, especially in the era of media, I'll say that, in the era of media, as before you put this, there were, Lee could probably tell you, she has all the institutional knowledge, but there were five different forms of all different types of content. It was very confusing to a lot of students, very confusing to the folks who were supposed to be in charge of giving responses, and people often probably got something to do with responses depending on what the actual activity was. So what happened at the behest of a meeting that we had with the assembly, we actually came up with quite a few recommendations that we can send to people. Now one of those is to centralize the and make it one form. And that has been done. And that form has been expanded so that people can report all types of things. So anything that falls under 6.4, we happily accept reports from them. And we also take things that are a little different. When we talk about reckless conduct in session, those are like things like that that come up. And when something is, when you feel uncomfortable, you're not quite sure what it is, some sort of type of conduct is ambiguous, you still encourage you to report it. I'd rather have a lot more reports than no reports at all, because then we don't know what's going on. Ethics concerns come in every now and again. Cases can be reported, although there isn't much form in the form for that. Criminal activity, there's a caveat that I'm going to give you in a second, and then broader community disruption. So just as I think you can think of, you can report it, it's a form we will work, we will try to do the best we can. I want to harp, I do this every time, and people think it's comical, but it's very serious, actually. This is another version of the reporting form. And my HR team is probably going to listen to me for this decision. I'm going to say it 5 times. I am. This is a non-emergency reporting form. This is a non-emergency reporting form. This is a non-emergency reporting form. What did I just say?
It's a non-emergency reporting form.
If we didn't get that slide, we're going to have to figure that out again. Please do not use this form to report emergencies. Do not pass those. Do not collect $200 if you need to call 607-255-1111 or 911 and call CDC if you are in the midst of emergency. A perfect first responder can get you. CDC is very good about filling out an online form personal flow chart because if you ever saw the flow chart before, it was a little too cumbersome for people to quite grasp. But the whole goal of the system is to be accessible and mobile. So when the report comes in, we triage it. I triage it, my office triages it. We figure out kind of what it is, we send it to the appropriate team, and the appropriate team comes up with the appropriate response. Case in point would be Spark. I believe that's the magic. Yes, our Bible comes in with you, this group of folks. Barcodes is really important to come for all of you. So instead of having cyber forms and cyber offices responsible for kind of letting in the response, we all get together every week and we go over every case in real time that is coming in and we try to figure out what's the best way for us to go about addressing the particular matter. And if you can see the full list of all of our team members there, but it's also on the video report that's in front of you, and it's also published online. The HR website has been done that purposefully. So everybody knows who they expect, who do they expect some sort of contact from, should you. So I think that you can actually go to the HR website and view the team itself and get an overview of what the whole system is. If you'd like to see incidents like we and how it works and aggregate data such as media reports and anything like that, you can go to the diversity website, diversity.cornell.edu/other-bias-activities. You can actually get free. I'm pretty good about putting that up today, so about putting it up in a timely fashion. So the January reports haven't quite been up, aren't quite up yet, but they should be on the of next week. So where are we now? We look at this fiscal year, just for the year reporting, we see that we're actually up to about 136 reported incidents. So that's reports, we say 136 reports. If you look at the number of unique incidents that have happened, there will be around 111. So the difference is there might be 10 people that file a report about the same incident. And so that's where you get the distinction between the two numbers. That number might seem jarring, a bit of an alarming to folks that don't need to think that that means that there's a whole lot of stuff happening on campus. The reality is that we were not tracking a lot of these incidents a few weeks before. So now, since we are doing it now, we're really encouraging people to report. We're probably actually just doing much better reporting culture about things that are happening. So I wouldn't venture too far to say it's because there's a lot more activity just yet. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Additionally, we've actually started tracking some of those issues. So before, human resources and HR systems were not actually filing reports. When people would come, employees walk in and they're coming with complaints or other things like that, they're doing that now. We're now being trained to do that. So that's a big difference. We've actually restructured our team. As a result of that, so we're improving our consulting labor relations and HR at the city level. So that was a brief overview, and I'm happy to answer any questions at this point from our whole team, because the team will answer all these questions, because I'm sure you all know what we're going to talk about now. So.
Do any members of this community or of the audience want to be on this?
The meeting is on the website, just to be clear, it is still on the online, just the official online reporting form. But there is a separate form that's maintained by the Zoom office, and I'm not sure if it makes any sense. Called Campus and Community Engagement maintains a form. I think it's on the site ECU, which you can access, and it's just everything is in the same place. I think it was just, I'm not sure why, but.
Action.
but it's not a matter of the permanent.
opportunity for him to be. But a lot of the matters of concern are contingent upon what the complainant wants to do. So we receive a lot of anonymous reports. Those are ones that inform the team, where some of the strengths are when there are individually reported occurrences, there are oftentimes when they say, like, we just want to let you know this is happening. This is something that has definitely occurred on social media. So the limitations of our response oftentimes are contingent upon the information that is provided to us. So I will review with you for individuals to provide as much information as possible. This is for some of the more broader public occurrences that have happened. There's been some private responses to the same things that happened to people publicly. Particularly played out in the media, but those individuals have not allowed a public response to occur. They just felt supported by the university and wanted to move on with their life. But then there have been opportunities where facilitated discussions have taken place with involved persons that were named or who expressed an interest in wanting to reach proper resolution. So a lot of it is based on context and has occurred in smaller pockets. But then across the board, much of the data has informed some broader kind of community discussion that folks in the trans community have participated in.
I would ask a couple things on the set. And I'm just a little big when it comes to the zone of recommendation. Over the last couple of years, not just based on the data, but also based on the quality of the data we've gotten from folks involved. Because we've made a lot of changes to the system. So one thing I would say is please don't take for granted the fact that information is public, because that does not happen with 2 years ago, right? So you're getting a lot more information than what was previously offered. We also, when we see a lot of things that come in, we do start pushing for things. So we see more campus-wide breaking registrations around a very particular topics, right?
support and or communicate with one person who may and then they know an additional person who may have witnessed the situation and more outreach, we reach out to them to the degree that they are open to our outreach. Sometimes that outreach is not responded to, but we always, we are aware of any individual who is impacted. We reach out to them either by phone or by email based on what they tell us is appropriate. So if we have individuals who are identified, then those people are contacted. Is that your question?
Yes, sir. And I'd also like to ask you a question. Okay, thank you very much.
Who they are, who they can do, like give them all the screenshots and we will have
believe is very positive and important thing, and also people do, people like our work, but they get to the practice and be responsible.
Definitely.
Steve. Hi, Lucy. Thanks for coming. I personally really appreciate all the time that they took to put this together. One thing I'm wondering about, and one thing that is a little bit concerning to me, is all of the Title IX investigations that the Education Department has opened up against the university. Right now, we have more pending investigations than any university in the country, and so I'm just curious as to, one, why that is, and two, because the last time I checked, policy 6.4, the draft was supposed to go into effect like a few days ago, but the report, as I can see, says that like the last update was on August 1st, so I guess I'm curious as to when the next policy 6.4 is going to be promulgated, but I know that it was reviewed by the policy advisory group in December, so I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit more about like, where we are in that process.
Sure. So as far as I know, in terms of the actual process where it's 6.4 would be released, the policy itself is done for the most part. It might not be up yet, but it is actually what we're going to do now are procedures of faculty and staff. What happened with 6.4 was that we pulled out procedures for students, faculty, and staff because they wouldn't be part of the policy overall. It's a very long period. But it also allows the university to be a lot more, I guess, nimble and flexible in terms of changing the procedure to be viewed. Those of you who probably aren't here, you all know, right? Once kind of Title IX issues started becoming kind of put out in the news a lot, we started getting involved in the corporate governance, right? So the university found its structure not able to handle the caseload all the time. Some people think that being unable to change the procedure made it very difficult. And that's why it was pulled out. In terms of the date, the reason that the August 1st date is in the question is that when students are used to these procedures, it went into effect. And so this report only encompasses activity that happens in a particular time period, so this fiscal year. So anything that happened after December 31st, 2016, did not have to be effect. So that's why that date is what it is. I can't comment on being on the investigative faculty.
the report comes in, and what the MSU said is within 72 hours, if we have a resolution, both the person who perpetrated the bias and the person who's impacted by the bias will receive outreach from the bar team, somebody on the bar team. And by that outreach, I think it's important that we spell out what we mean by that is, because you asked a question like about investigating, is we're investigating, you also just how can you do to make sure it doesn't happen again. But two of those things are outside of our jurisdiction, right? Our team, as far as I know, we don't investigate now. And we don't really have the power to make sure something doesn't happen again. In the world of bias, like real talk right now, nobody has the ability to do that. So I think what we are able to do, what our locus of control is to reach out to both the person who did it and the person who received it and have a conversation, a supportive conversation and a challenging conversation, respectively. The challenging conversation, though, with the person who committed the bias incident is all under the auspices of, hey, look, we'd like to have a conversation about what our behavior looks like at Cornell. We're not adjudicating the student code of conduct unless a code violation has happened, because that goes out of our team then. It goes over to the JA office, right? We're not enforcing criminal law, because if the law is broken, that goes over to CUPD. So I think that this is where we need your help as a student assembly in helping us spread the word about about an accurate brand perception of what the bar team is. Because your question really speaks to a brand issue that we sometimes feel on campus, which is students say, oh, there's a bar team. When there's a bar incident, who else can step in and investigate, hold people accountable, and prevent bias from happening in the future? And we actually do none of those things. We do other things, but we don't do any of those things. So we really need your help in clarifying our brand, because it's really harmful to the campus morale if people think that we can investigate, hold people accountable, and prevent bias from happening. Because then they're constantly disappointed in what we do, right? But what we do is important on an individual basis, from a place of supporting people who have been received bias, right, or victims of bias. And it's also really important in terms of interpersonal accountability for the person who perpetrated bias. We're just talking about this at this Wednesday meeting. When you get a call from someone on the bar team and say, hey, I want to have a conversation with you about something you said, we might not be able to impose any sanctions or punishment per se. But that conversation says something about Cornell's values and our community accountability. At least we have that phone call. At least you have somebody in a position of strong authority talking to you about, like, look, this university actually does have a set of values, and we really think that you might cross the line. And you know, it's limited power, but it is powerful. So I hope that clarification helps, and I hope that you're hearing my ask here, and how you can turn around to the community that you work with, and when they say, well, why is the bar team doing something? Well, actually, it's an assessment and review team.
He's all right. We'll keep him around. And our last question will come from Allie.
Thank you.
there may not always be an immediate program or response that the unit has in mind that they're able to implement, but just having the information is very helpful.
So, in open microphone, Representative Coffin issued a motion. We have a rules update. It's impermissible under the rules, under Section 3 of the General Guidelines, Section G, FA Liaison. This states the FA should have the option of appointing a student assembly member to serve as a non-voting liaison to each organization or, where appropriate, to its executive board.
And so, if you accept your email, that was emailed to all of you.
So, unfortunately,
I withdraw that motion.
Okay. So, there's
I'd like to make another motion.
I would guess.
Motion to appoint an FA
So, is there, there's no dissent proceeding to it?
Motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Second.
I withdraw the motion.
Do you have a point of information?
No, I have a question. So, I don't have a conversation about whether
we should vote on this. So, if my understanding of the motion is correct, it's only to discuss the member of the 27 of us or 28 of us that we should elect, but if we approve this now, we would approve the position, which would be elected in confidential executive session.
Do
you like to make a statement on the, yeah, that's open for discussion now, your first one to give us.
Okay. So I think I just have some time to view what our presence there would really do for the organization and why SA has to do that and why we could kind of sort of facilitate sort of breaking bread between the organization and the organization.
I just want to make sure that they're following their policies and that they don't take advantage of their power and kind of favor different organizations that they either represent or feel are more important to what they think the global organization should be. Because obviously, I think the past is based on what they do and it's important to them.
Thank you. Next is we're going to do 45 seconds to your time or question time. Alex, you have 45 seconds. So I'll let Gabe respond.
So is this okay? Is this working? No. All right. I'll project. So two things. Yeah. According to the Student Union Board's charter, each Byline funded group can have a representative on their organization. But what I'm so class councils can handle that internally. That's their prerogative. But what I'm talking about and what the motion that I made does is, according to the Student Assembly's charter, any Byline-funded group, and in this case, this organization, I think, received about $40,000 from us last year, any Byline-funded group that makes a contract with the Student Assembly, acting on behalf of students, basically subjects their executive board to have the SA appoint one of its members to their e-board to basically just make sure that they're enforcing the charter that we approved. So, all this would do is, I mean, first of all, we have this, can I have a motion?
Sorry.
All right. We need to get rid of that. Yeah, so, okay. That's a good point.
Thank you.
So, we knew this involved organizations. Most of the time, our relationship with the Byline-funded groups is friendly, as it should be. And obviously, I don't exactly know what was in this case, but I can say that after having gone through a Byline funding cycle, and having been on the Student Assembly for like 3 years now, this is an organization that has had like issues dealing with the Student Assembly, with ISC, with PANEL, with MGLC, with class councils, and lots of school-based program board, and lots of other organizations. So this organization, in my mind, has lost the benefit of the doubt.
Point of privilege, I just want to remind everybody that this is going to be a non-voting position if it's approved. They can just be annoying. They can't actually change sub-policy.
All right. Next on the speaker's list is Richard. You are now.
I am very for this position. I think it's necessary because it's not just a
sense proceeding to voting? With none, we'll proceed to voting. All those in favor, please raise your placard. All those opposed? Abstentions? By a vote of 21-0-0, we'll have had that in today's executive session. Now we're proceeding into announcements and reports. So make sure you send that to me. And also, a lot of you guys are getting really close to having the maximum number of absences. We've already had 4 distance hearings this year so far, and we don't want to have any more. So if you guys want to know like where you're at and stuff, just let me know so we don't have to send out that mean email.
Is that
valid? Okay. Any of you have any questions for Rep. Valadez? Yes. So you were also in the Sigs list, but I'm going to ask that you talk to her offline because we have to get forward, get moving. So we're proceeding into initiative now, and we're going to have a restructuring conversation for about 20 to 30 minutes, and then we'll proceed into executive session. So everyone's going to be limited to 1 minute, and then if anyone asks for an extension, that'll be limited to 30 seconds, or else I'll roll it out of order because we have to proceed quickly since we have lost a lot of time. So I'll give Representative Berger, you have 4, or President Berger, you have 4 minutes to introduce the committee's recommendation.
Hi everyone. So as you should know, the restructuring committee has been had that one time last semester, and then we got meeting scheduled for this semester. There was for full transparency, we didn't have quorum on a lot of that, and the committee took time to
Gates.
Hi.
You you 1 minute each.
First of all, thank you for getting this off the ground. I've been to the meetings and I think that you said, and I think congratulations.
Speaker's list is Tracy. So, I'm sorry, Aki.
Which is why I think 5 minutes of the semester should really cover as much ground as possible.
Are you ready to respond?
Yeah.
Next on the speaker list is Dale.
So I also was worried that we shouldn't switch to a calendar year because it would affect our existence as a constituency of the university assembly. But even though we probably won't get this approved before fall of 2017, and that would mean the spring of 2018 election would be the first one affected, there is the possibility that we could somehow hold a special election for all the positions this fall if we get the new documents approved soon enough, and then an interim assembly could take over for that spring before another election is held for the following year, and I think that should be considered, even though that sounds like a logistical nightmare.
Thank you. Would you like to respond?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Can I ask a question to Dan?
Yeah.
I think we can discuss this further later. I would also think Gina would have to be involved in those discussions about how we could hold 28, 30, 50 special elections, depending on how things work out.
Thank you.
Hannah.
Excellent. what they actually do, and I know that like a couple other admin members in the room can answer those questions, but if people who actually have the rules were there, then you could give them a more realistic day-to-day and your opinion. And like, yes, there's maybe a subcommittee that's going to reach out, but like, that's like only one subcommittee, and I'll get back to them.
And also the stuff we're talking about, I really do think that SA members should be there hearing about it, because the way it seems to me is going to be a very large change, and if the first you're hearing about it is in one of our weekly SA meetings, we're never going to be talking about this. So we really have to be while we're designing the new structure of the SA.
Thank you, next speaker. This is Diana.
Okay, I just want to say one thing really quickly. I think that it's great for us to take our time and figure everything out. Usually I'm a proponent for doing that. My only concern with this, and I spoke about this last time as well, is that for the 3 years that I've been on the assembly, every year somebody talks about restructuring. And then Juliana, a year ago, wanted to implement it. She ran on that platform that spring that she ran. And then nothing happened in the fall. And then we sort of started something in the spring. And then last fall, we started again, and now officially we're starting. So the only problem that I see with putting this off until spring 2018 is that people think a year is a long time, when in reality, a year passes by very quickly when you're on this campus. So my fear is that it's just going to keep getting pushed off, not intentionally, but just because of the nature of how busy people are. So since we're here, and a lot of us are returning members and have the time now to dedicate to this, like, I would really strongly advise everybody in this room again, if no one's worth of such a time meeting, and to
speakers list is Way. Next, is there anyone else who would like to be in the first speakers list? Proceeding to the second speakers list, Kate, give a minute.
Yeah, so my final comment is if we want to make our terms shorter and have them not last for a year, that would require either amending the section of the charter to give student assembly term length, or it would require amending the section of the charter that deals with what is considered to be one session of the assembly, which as of right now lasts from June 1st to May 31st. So your term expires after a year, and because of what's in the charter, so you have to amend the charter.
You're right, please respond. Tracy.
So I have a question about how you plan on really prioritizing what issues are going to be most important in this restructuring process. Do you tackle every issue of a setting and wait for that to like one 120-page document? We're not going to do that because there's so many, and I think it's an error aspect of this organization. So I just like to hear about how you're doing that, because obviously everyone has their different priorities, but personally, academic year, calendar year, that's not a concern of mine. My issue is a lack of inclusivity on this board and how it is every year. That's not a good thing. And why I would like us to get them as soon as possible is because we're going to have the same type of people on this next year. And it's going to be, like, so it's going to be helpful, that's really hard to do. Thank you. Thank you. That's a great question. I think that I wrote the committee up into three subcommittees based on the initial discussion of the committee, focusing on kind of like the key stakeholders being like the student body at large, and then members who interacted with the body, and like a representative role, like what the students do, and some of the part of the discussion. And we created a third subcommittee of the group to investigate other models, because the idea that we don't need this from scratch. But I think that the reason why I see these questions that I brought up here is because I think like the more likely to create questions about exactly like representation, like we had a social representation sitting the other day from Kate, and I think those are conversations that are very much extended and less logistical. And I wanted to kind of
40 seconds.
I still understand. So
I think, Jordan, I think what she's asking is what Dale was talking about earlier. Why do you have one, like what he was saying, an interim in the fall and then like a spring thing?
All right. Hang on. The parliamentarian team.
And then I'm going to hand it to Julia. So very quickly, what I was talking about is if this document is approved, let's say, the very end of this semester, the very beginning of next semester, technically all the positions we elect this March would no longer be valid under our new charter. So what we might do is we stick to our academic year rather than wait to install the new assembly and the new charter in fall of 2018. We could hold a special assembly-wide election this fall to elect for a half term in spring 2018. If that makes sense.
Your point of information. You can answer in 15 seconds, yeah.
I think that would just depend on the future.
Yeah,
if
you're next.
I would just be able to get rid of the members.
Okay.
I'm going to do the platform for the presentation because it was just like,
thank you. Next on the speaker's list is Allie. Session afterwards, so we have to go through that quickly. So sitting in seats a little longer. You have a point of information?
Was the current committee
not class? Sorry. So then, was the current committee not class the next summer? It's an ad hoc committee. It's only for this term of the assembly. It's not in our documents.
Okay.
Varun is next.
So I just wanted to make a brief point that if we decided to do something regarding like interim elections, just recognizing the stress of running in two elections within the same small time period is tremendous for a lot of people. And assuming that most of the people that run for the first election would want to run again, that'd be a lot, not only for stress but also in terms of like financial.
Thank you for having me. Next on the speaker is Hannah.
So I think like a structure should be like this is a very complicated.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Dave.
I just want to say that while I think the PSA can improve, and if I have made my presentation to the dollar can improve, I don't necessarily think the PSA is so far from an approximation of representation that we shouldn't even consider like its actions as legitimate. So I disagree. I think that, you know, instead of the community taking time to come up with something good, then tap things up on piecemeal, and hope that in the end, if, you know, we get a much kinder.
Would you like to respond?
Thank you.
Hannah. Okay, with that, we're done.
Motion to move into executive session.
Second.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.